Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Boom, boom.
Ack-a-lack-a-lack-a-boom. Boom, boom. Ack-a-lack-a-boom, boom. Hey, and welcome to another White Press Play. This time we're talking about the 1989 Michael Keaton movie, The Dream Team. A lost gem in time. Maybe overshadowed by other releases of that year. It was a big year for movies, 1989. I'm here with my brethren. Beard wearer, musician, talented, knowledgeable man, and former guest on Those Conspiracy Guys, and now current guest on White Press Play, Mr. Neil Rochford.
How are you going on, lads?
How are you doing, Neil?
Not too bad, no.
Neil, you wrote a book.
I did write a book.
And we're going to turn it into an audio book for these lovely ear biscuits.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make.
Can't wait for it.
Yeah. Can you tell us about your book?
Yeah, it's a sci-fi thriller.
Mm.
It's called The Blue Ridge Project. They released it last year. It's available on Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, all those guys, anywhere you buy your online books.
And we'll have a sequel is in the pipe?
A sequel's in the pipe, and we're going to have a few fingers and a few pies.
It's a trilogy.
Planned trilogy. Yeah. And I'm going to maybe possibly do some side bits. Possibility of a graphic novel adaptation, you know, I don't know yet.
We have to find the talented man to draw it. Ben Hennessy, where are you? And Neil, you're also a former, like, we used to play on a band together, for those who don't know Neil. Mm-hmm. My brother, we've been on TCG, we talk, if you want to hear us reminisce, mm-hmm. go on there, they're 5 or 6 hours long, I love them. But you've recently got back into playing music.
I did, yeah. My girlfriend bought me a guitar for my birthday and basically said, you may start playing that again.
Guilted you into being...
Encourage me.
Yeah, well, guilt, encouragement, so as long as one ever gets the job done, right? And you're playing again, you're really enjoying it?
Yeah, played the other night there, it was good crack, so...
Love it. Yeah. And if people wanted to read your book or see your face or get in contact with you, you're on Twitter at...
At Neil Rochford.
Neil Montgomery Rochford.
No, we're not using Montgomery anymore.
Right, that's gone.
Got too confusing for people.
At Neil Rochford, N-E-I-L.
R-O-C-H-F-O-R-D. Same as yourself.
Cool aboola. And you have a website as well?
I have a website as well, neiltr.com. It's a bit dusty at the minute, but
sure.
there'll be stuff coming up eventually.
Yeah, you lived abroad, you lived in Brazil, you lived in France.
A few different spots around the world.
Wore the soles off a few pairs of shoes.
I did. Yeah, I just got smaller and smaller bags and eventually just came home with what was on my back.
Like Jesus our Lord.
Mm.
He done the same. Yeah, so thanks for joining us on the show. This is your this is your first go on White Press Play.
Yeah,
you're used to the long form. We're going to get this in and out in about an hour. Mm-hmm. Have the crack and recommend this, one of our childhood favorites, I think.
Oh, big time.
We had this on video, and our father who you will hear of many a time on this show, I would mm-hmm. say, he was a great man for the old
white trash piracy.
Exactly. No, do you know the codes he used to type into the video plus, that's video. It he was a man for the video plus, and mm-hmm. he'd go along and he'd look through the paper and be like, oh, there's a movie that has a name. I have no idea what it's about. Record. And quite similar to myself when we first got broadband, when I was like, all the things, like, just download everything with no intention of watching it. And we had a video vaults. We had
walls of
VHS that were bought from bargain bins and supermarkets.
Mm. All long play. So you get
the
240 movies on it.
Exactly. Long play video, man. Imagine. Mm. And it was my first time, like, I was able to get all the X-Files on tape together, recording mm-hmm. from BBC Two. I was able, we had a pretty good, like, movie collection, but it was all very wait for TV kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, being born in the early 80s for me, late 80s for you, mm-hmm. we were one of those middling Xennials, they call us. So we had an analog childhood and a digital adulthood, and we were very much a VHS family.
Mm-hmm.
And the old story of, you know, the father chips in with a load of lads and gets like a timeshare on a VHS in the fucking late 80s, because while we were poor, we still had notions.
Yeah.
And I remember Dad getting the VHS from his workplace.
Yeah.
For the week before Christmas, so we could record a few things and then not get to watch him until the next Christmas. But then we couldn't watch them because he was tapered more stuff to watch the following Christmas, and so on and so on. And I mean, Ireland doesn't have that many, I would call them maybe archivists, internet archivists, where you could look up some weird, like, English obscure TV show or some ad online and you would be able to find it. But for Irish media, I don't think there is that person.
Yeah, I'd say there would have been a lot of stuff like in the RD studios or whatever that would have just been tossed out, like, you know, those old...
I think they keep everything, but nobody is like actively going in and saying, okay, this crazy ad, like, this is really funny, let's put this on. Or some like weather, you know, the weather report where your one is wearing like a fucking totally sheer, see-through dress or something. Like those weird Irishisms that people remember vaguely. There's not that much of an internet culture in Ireland where people would take that stuff and put it online. But we have a treasure trove at home.
There you go.
So, I mean,
we did tape the ads.
If you want to, put it through so that, you know, we can take like 2 months off and go through that whole video archive, Irish listeners, we will be able to pull that stuff off videotapes and maybe do a national tape to digital conversion movement.
There you go.
And try and get all these old TV shows back on. Episodes of The Den and stuff that were on with Ray Darcy and even Ian Dempsey. Like, if that was a British TV show, like Blue Peter, you can watch every single episode ever, and they're all up online on YouTube for free. Dempsey's Den, which was our, like, childhood from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. every single day, like, you can't find but, like, three or four little clips of that.
Yeah.
Do you know? And it was our childhood.
But I remember it being, like, even... if you think back now, there would be some stuff that would still bring a smile to your face, like, you know, the Dustin the Turkey stuff, the
Zigzag stuff,
the way they push the envelope and stuff for afternoon kids programs,
like, dirty like jokes, the kids
Raj freaking people out and all.
It just sails just lightly over the heads of kids and into the ears of the adults cooking the dinner. It'll give you a chuckle over a pot of stew, you know. So I think for the shows that we're going to be on, there will be a lot of nostalgia for those kind of movies. We have been talking about different movies, and we will be doing other ones that are typical Rochford household fare. Our other brother Paul also will be coming on and maybe talking about a few older movies and stuff that he showed to us. But these are ones we kind of discovered together. We're only 4 years apart, so we kind of had the same generation. I think you're closer to the millennial generation than I am, maybe a little bit. It's only four years, but
it's a big 4 years.
Yeah, it was the most important four. 4 more years. So it's just the movies that we're going to be coming up with from now on will be those like late 80s, early 90s, the ones that forged our senses of humor. And TV shows we're going to talk about, like, we used to love watching BBC Two on Friday nights with Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer, Red Dwarf, you know, these kind of...
That classic Brit Gold comedy.
British comedy stuff. That I don't think is there really anymore, and it's all on like UK Classic Gold or whatever, but it's not on a channel, or it's not the only thing out there that people would be forging their senses of humour on, and I think that's maybe where we get it. So, into the show... that's a kind of a long intro, but it's your first show, and I'd like to introduce the audience to you.
There we go.
The next time it'll be straight in with no kissing. If you like the show, or you like what you're hearing, or you want to hear more of it, you can head over to whitepressplay.com, where we have loads of reviews, videos. We might actually not have them now, but if you're listening to this in the future time, we probably will. So this isn't for right now, so don't go there now and go, your fucking website is empty. I was like, I know it's empty, we're just filling it up. But if this is like past 2017, welcome to Why Press Play. Our website is full now of stuff. You can go on there and get reviews that are written by our hosts, by special writers that we got in for the job. And there's videos and stuff that we're making. There's also live shows that you can get a hold of from Twitch, YouTube, and VidMe. If you want to get in contact with us on social media, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, on all of them. Snapchat, the whole lot. It's all Why Press Play. We have a subreddit as well, r/ Why Press Play. And everything for all this. We have a t-shirt shop as well, TeePublic, where you get loads of stuff. Everything is on the website. It's whitepressplay.com. Go have a look there. If you want to join in the conversation, you want to have a chat with us, or a chat with the fans together, talking about movies, talking about what you love, Discord is an app that you can get that's blown up at the moment, and everybody comes together and they talk in certain channels and chat rooms, and it's like the old Yahoo chat rooms of old. You're able to talk in audio and in typed text, so there's like little chat, like audio chat rooms you can bop in and have chats with strangers and connect, meet up. The reason we found Discord is because we use Patreon. Patreon is a crowdfunding service where you can go in and donate like as little as $2. You get loads of outtakes, behind the scenes stuff. You get to contact us like on special Discord channels, and you get videos early release. You get you can get to listen to the live show. We'll be broadcasting the live shows out through Discord, and you get access through Twitch as well. So head over to patreon.com/whitepressplay, and you become like the favorite child in the family. Yeah,
it's like a backstage pass or
exactly
something.
Yeah, it's like it's the digital equivalent of having big tits and being in the front row. We're like, oh hi, come on in, like would you give us money to support the show, to help us further our digital acquisitions, like PlayStation 4 games and stuff that we're going to review, and it pays for the hosting for the website and for the podcast hosting and stuff like that. And Discord is all involved in that, so that's why we got that together. We also do stream on Twitch. We'll put those videos up on YouTube and Vidme as well, and we stream on PS4 and Steam. So if you want to join in with us, get to be a Patreon, send us your gamer tag, and we'll join in, and we might have an old game of Rocket League or an old game of Helldivers or something like that, a bit of crack. And we will be doing live shows, like I said. We're deciding between which kind of live show software to use right now at this time of recording, which is kind of like Blab of old, for those that remember Blab, in a kind of a four-way split screen chat where you can ask questions, and it's kind of like a town hall kind of a thing that happens. And I really want to try and get something like that going with this show, and some kind of a two-way conversation where you guys can be like, hey, what about this, and blah blah blah, and ask this kind of stuff. Like there is stuff to be decided, and there will be thematic shows like best movies starring like some psycho murderer guy, or best movies where that's all female cast, or best movies set in a dystopian future, best movies from foreign directors,
right?
You know, best blaxploitation films from the 70s, you know, like this picture of the archives, these kind of things, and TV shows as well, computer games. So it's all movies, TV shows, and computer games on White Press Play. So with that all out of the way, this is a long intro for the show, and it's not this long usually. With that out of the way, we're going to talk about the movie Dream Team. A stalwart of our childhood, Neil.
That's a fantastic movie.
Love this fucking movie. Tell us, we do this thing over White Press Play, it's 60 seconds, no spoiler. So if you can, are you sufficiently warmed up to do this?
I think I can give it a go.
Yeah, how's your mat muscles? So we're going to do 60 seconds, no spoilers. Neil's going to tell you all about this movie, and then we're going to take it apart and talk about it. Some of the funniest shit from some of the funniest shit from my childhood. Neil's going to tell you all about it. So 60 seconds, Neil. I'll give you 60 seconds from now.
Okay, so we start off in Cedarbrook Mental Institution, or Psychiatric Institution, maybe to be more precise. We have Billy Caulfield, who's an angry...
10 seconds.
He's a very angry pathological liar. We have Christopher Lloyd's character, Henry Sikorsky, who's deluded into thinking that he's a doctor. We have Jack McDermott, played by Peter Boyle, and he believes that he's Jesus. And we have a semi-catatonic, who can only speak in baseball terms, Albert Iannucci, played by Stephen First. So the doctor is played by Zadigas. He organizes a field trip as a part of their therapy out to see a baseball game. On the field trip into New York City, the doctor, while taking Albert for a piss, he witnesses
45
two corrupt cops killing another cop. After this, he's beaten into a coma, and the four patients have to run around the city looking after themselves and trying to save the doctor while getting back in time for the last baseball game of the day.
And all the rest
just kind of, that's the end.
It's hard to do, right?
Yeah.
I've had a few people on trying to do that. Like, it's tough, man. I tried to do it myself for one or two of them with Steve, and it's like,
Well, like you get the first 15 minutes of the movie and the first 40 seconds.
The first 40 seconds is like, that's it. Steve goes like, okay, we open on a, you know, a sunny morning. The mist is gently rising. You're like, dude, it's fucking 15 seconds already. Like, let's get going. And then some other guys are like, it's just four guys get in a van and then do a thing, some cops, and that's the end.
Yeah, 40 seconds left. What do you want to do?
So, yeah, it's a brilliant premise.
Yeah, deadly. I haven't seen actually anything really similar.
This is the thing. This is what we're going to be talking about on this show. Mm-hmm. The most, I believe. And it's a real old man like rubbing your legs in front of a fucking secondary school kind of, oh, they don't make him like that anymore. Like, this is what's happening. They don't make him like that anymore. No. Where it's a super simple story, but you do your character archetypes. Mm-hmm. You flesh it out with each one has their own like motivation. And... you know, you're not
it's done,
obsessed
it's done really
with
earnestly.
Earnest.
I think,
yeah. It's fucking honest. It's mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like from doing improv and stuff that I did, like a lot of people would go into like improv and they would always try to bang the jokes mm-hmm. and just be like, boop, 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 and get the laugh. And I did do short form improv and stuff. And you are going for the cock jokes. And, you know, from people mm-hmm. listening to those conspiracy guys, sometimes, you know, to lighten the mood or to bring up something that's kind of like, oh Jesus, you just have to go like, me Mickey, and everyone laughs and you're like, okay, let's just fucking move on, like let's ride the wave of that laugh into yeah. something new and just change it. And the underlying truth behind all of those like interactions on stage live or in even in the show or on any TV show is like the people mm-hmm. the character. And this is why shows that have character rather than special effects or rather than you know, like John Wick or some shit, yeah, where you're just like, it's all action. It's like porn, mm-hmm. do you know? It still gives you a boner. You can still
it's just a different kind.
Yeah, you still jip off. It does the job, but mm-hmm. it's more like a mechanical or a medicinal thing. It's not like having sex with somebody that you love.
Yeah, you don't go through an emotional journey
exactly.
on it. Like,
there's no hypothalamic. Release. There's no hypothalamic intervention, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that this movie, the way that they're building the characters, and it's set in that like old timey. It's old timey now. It's fucking 30 years. Like we're old timey. Jesus,
when I was young,
like the 80s and early 90s had those movies that were like, here's the story. It doesn't have to be massive. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be like always set up to look forward to making a sequel. Mm-hmm. It's a small thing. This shit happened. It can happen in like the space of like this movie is set in what like
a day and a half.
A day and a half, maybe mm-hmm. 2 days. Like that's it. Mm-hmm. Tell a story. Do the thing. We start in the middle of the story. Mm-hmm. If we need to find out backstory, we do. You know, as the thing happens and then it stops and everyone's like, they laugh and they freeze frame and it's fucking roll credits and you're like, cool, that was a little story.
Done. Completely encapsulated.
And now there's a whole thing of like, we have to make the franchise and it has to be the action figures and the computer game, the whole fucking thing.
And there has to be like a minimum of 10 quip lines, you know, yeah. relevant to yeah. the situation at the end. It's like...
Do we need it?
Yeah.
Do we need it? So for this movie... Mm-hmm. Like the way it's constructed, it's real, like a novel-esque.
Yeah, that's what strikes me about it as well.
Yeah,
they come up. There's no, what would it be the word? Like, there's no forced character development. Yeah. It happens up naturally because, you know, when they get into the city and they're released yeah. to go off on their own thing, that is like then the epitome of a character journey. Like yeah, you're left on your own with challenge.
Yeah,
two,
yeah,
exactly.
And they get put into these situations that mm-hmm. crystallizes the, I suppose, the assumptions that the audience would see in the first few scenes. So mm-hmm. let's go into the first few scenes. And we start off in a mental hospital. Mm-hmm. There's four motherfuckers. Yeah. But we start off, and it's kind of like you don't know what's happening. Mm-hmm. There's a full orchestral music score for this movie. It's mm-hmm. like very well constructed, mm-hmm. As well as then some pop songs like, open the door, get on the floor, everybody walk that dinosaur. Like when they're driving to New York, it's fucking, I was like, boom, boom, shakalaka, boom. Remember the two of us sitting on the sitting room floor going, that's a brilliant song. Too bad it wasn't from a more famous band.
Well.
So yeah, we the main characters, like we're introduced to Christopher Lloyd as Henry Sikorsky first, walk around, and we only find out later on, that, like in a couple of minutes, that he thinks he's a doctor. Mm-hmm. But for the time being, we're like, oh, he's a doctor and blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. Turns out he's mental.
It's just like the little tiny rug that they pull out from under you, but it's still like you're already, oh, okay, so they tricked me. You're intrigued. You're already on the follow. Like,
exactly. Yeah. And he goes around and he just comes to the other guys that are in his group therapy group, comes to Billy Caulfield, which is played by Michael Keaton. And he's like playing table tennis with a guy on Thorazine. And it's kind of, you see, there's already a compassionate side in him, even though he's snarky and sarcastic. And, you know, he's still kind of like, come on.
Involving the other guy.
He's always on that. He's like, whatever situation he's in, he may not need to be in the mental hospital, but he's there and he's just fucking getting on with it. There's no point in bitching and complaining. He's that kind of a dude. And these very, very strong characters are already coming out. He goes to find Jack McDermott, who's played by Peter Boyle, the dad from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Hey, dad, you think you're Jesus?
And he comes in and he opens the door and he's drinking from straight from the bottle.
Oh yeah, he's in the nip.
In the nip. In the and he has that weird old man, like wet diaper arse. Just like, it's just hanging down in the middle. And he gets up and he's like, I'm just partaking in some of my own blood or whatever. And he's like, it's time for group. And Jack then gets up and they all go to the room. And then we're introduced to Albert. And Albert is a...
And he's he'd be a catatonic, mainly because he can't speak.
Yeah.
But he'll try and communicate through baseball terms.
Right. So the first time we see him, he's standing up singing the end of the national anthem. Home of the brave. And he sits down. And then they come over and he's like, Albert, it's time for group. He's like, play ball. He's like, no, it's time for group. And he's like, play ball? Like, it's like, I am Groot.
Yeah, this kind of thing. The same. Say a little with a lot, say a lot with a little.
Yeah, and they bring him to the group. Say he tries to steal the cupcake as well. It's very funny. He tries to take it. It's like, no, that belongs to him. He's like, okay. But you see, he's fucking switched on because he puts it down. He looks up, the guy's walking away and he's like, yeah, okay.
Snatches it again.
Like, you're like, okay, he's catatonic, but he's not tick. It's possibly a choice, you know? So these four guys go into group therapy and they're in the group with Dr. Weitzman, who's played by Dennis Boutsakaris. And we know him from Batteries Not Included is probably his other most famous one that he stars. He's the star of that movie. He's also in Money Monster and The Bourne Legacy, but just like bit parts. And he mostly plays a doctor. He's in maybe like 15 movies.
He's just one of those faces like that you always remember. Yeah. Like, you know.
And there's a lot of those guys in this. Like the cops from later on. It's like he's that character in every film. So the four guys are in the group therapy and they kind of get a little bit about what's happening. And we find out that Billy is a violent, you know, a psychopath. And he's a like a chronic liar.
Yeah. Massive liar, like in the first couple, like he's talking about being
coming second to Daytona,
exactly. Yeah, being decorated war veteran and all this stuff.
You weren't in Vietnam, Bill. You're too young. It's like, yeah, well, but like making up wild shit, and you can just see that it's, you know, a man that has had a hard life, and he's trying to escape into a world where he feels in control, and the lack of control forces him to anger, and we can all. So I feel like the dream team is a little bit, every one of them is a little bit of me. Sometimes I like to sit around in a nip and drink wine straight from the bottle.
But that's the thing.
And like, throw a chair through a window.
You're on about like the archetypal characters. Like these four basically fit. If you have like any goofball character coming up before in any movie leading up to this, they would have had one or more traits of all of these guys. Like.
Yeah.
So like you know, the overly aggressive alpha leader.
Yeah.
The beta, you know, insecure doctor who's
trying to tear down the alpha with little picky kind of comments and stuff.
The wild card is Peter Boyle, the complete nut job, and then you have like the weird, like the extra weird who would be Albert. Like
they were the A team of a psychiatric mental institution. Yeah. I ain't getting on no Thorazine. Get a Lexapro waving me, fool. But it just seems like the way these characters are built, and they're just set on it. It's a super simple premise. Just setting a journey. The doctor wants to take him on a trip to New York as part of like this outside therapy, and we get introduced to the other doctor. So there's like the main doctor, Doctor. I always sing it like Henry Sikorsky. So, I'm telling Dr. New World, right? And him and two other like you know, asshole dickhead doctors who don't
the conservative types,
the horn-rimmed glasses and shit, and they don't like Dr. Weitzman and his like airy-fairy hippie kind of real ways. And he's like, come on man, these guys are going to be institutionalized forever, let's take them on a fucking trip, on a day to remember, bring them to the ball game, get them a hot dog, you know, get a dog in the stands. And that seems to be that whole all-American apple pie 4th of July shit, where it's like, there's nothing better than a baseball game and a hot dog and a beer
with your pals,
With your buds. And we never see a fucking baseball in the whole thing. Like, there's nothing in, you know. They never make it. Spoilers. And it's a nice little almost 2 hours of a jaunt into a really good story with great characters. It all branches off. The second act, the whole thing opens up like a lovely flower. And then the third act is the satisfaction, a little bit of action, a little bit of kind of, you know, proper good film.
I mean, like, for coming up on close on 2 hours, there wasn't any really point where it drags, like, there's even on rewatches.
There's no fat, there's no gristle. So in this group therapy session, you find out a lot about these guys, and yet there is still more than to be developed. So Billy is a pathological liar. Henry Sikorsky had divorced from his wife and he had a psychotic break, and he now thinks he's a doctor, but he really works for, and I don't think they say what his job is, but they say he works for the post office, they say he works for a waste management company, they say he works in an office. There's a few little different things. You find out that Jack,
He was the senior VP, or was VP.
Very high up anyway, in an advertising company, and he made all the decisions and stuff. And he obviously had, you know, a
breakdown,
an executive, you know, mental murmur, and just thought he was Jesus, got a messianic complex, and had to fucking bounce. He was like, I'm out, checking out of life. And all these guys had lives outside, and this was made very evident from the get go. So they say, okay, let's go on the baseball game. We're getting this thing. They got into a van. They're driving into town. And they all have real social issues. And as much as you think Michael Keaton is probably the most normal, as soon as he starts to reflect off other people, you didn't find out how actually weird he is. You know. And so they're driving into the city. It's one of my favorite bits in the film. They're driving into the city and they start singing, you know, they're like, oh, we have to, you know, Henry Sikorsky, Christopher Lloyd character, is kind of like that Rain Man, like, we've got to be back for 2:30.
Yeah, yeah, very neurotic.
We're going to miss Wafner, 2:30 Wafner. And they put on Ray Charles, Hit the Road, Jack,
right,
in the van. And then they all start
moving, bopping.
Hit the road, Jack. They're just singing along. And then all of a sudden, Jack in the back seat is like, oh, woman, oh, woman, don't you treat me so mean. And I'm just like, baiting myself that. It's so good. It's so good when you hear joining in the song and stuff like that. It's just, they're all quite volatile towards each other and they're all very close. So then when they hit the city and Albert is like, you're batter up, holding his dick because he has to piss, but he's trying to communicate it through baseball terms. So he's like, I gotta go for a piss. Like, you gotta go, batter up. You're like, oh, okay, I get it. And they bring him down an alley to have a piss, and he keeps going further and further down the alley. Obviously, he's, you know, catatonic, but he's not, doesn't want to show his penis around. And and so he witnesses a crime.
Yeah, so the doctor is following him down the alley to try and find where Albert went. And he comes across two cops. Well, we don't know they're cops at this time.
Yeah.
But he comes across two cops shooting another guy in the head. And then he's caught witnessing this. So he tries to run away.
Dr. Weitzman is caught
witnessing this. He tries to run away. And he gets the head beaten off him by these two guys.
Pistol whipped.
Pistol whipped, pretty much, yeah. Knocked out in a coma.
So he's in a coma. Albert can't talk.
No.
He witnesses the whole thing happen. And he steps out from behind like two bins. And he's like, and your man is comatose on the ground. The ambulance comes, takes him away. Albert is like lassie, just, what do I do? And he goes back to the van. He just sits in the van. And then the four lads are like, where's the doctor? And he's like, because he can't talk. And the adventure then opens up into these four guys have to fucking survive on their own. They don't know who's out there. The tables turn on them very quickly when the hospital realizes they haven't come back. They put out an APB kind of a thing on all these guys, and they end up getting turned into criminals. And there's like an everybody against them compulsion,
because
the good guys are against them, the bad guys are against them from all sides. They're on their own, and it's a real A-team vibe.
You know, they have to use their wits and their
and overcome their
illness, basically
overcome their psychological obstacles. But But there is a real nice catharsis in the third act where they all go back and confront the things that.
Well, the parts of their previous lives to before they when they came into the institution. You know, you have Billy has his girlfriend. You have Jack's former business partners, and you have Sikorsky's family.
Yeah.
The only one we don't go into the back is Albert.
So that's for the sequel.
Yeah.
Dream Team 2, The Albert Chronicles.
There you go.
And we just, yeah, it's weird how we don't find out what's up with him. Mm. And at the end, he's just like...
He's a mascot figure or it? Something. Or not a MacGuffin, but he's just like, he's a device to move the plot along, because if one of the other guys had gone down to take a piss,
they would have
been able to talk
exactly.
or would have been able to do something else.
So I think maybe that silence, that he's not cured, but he's still able to communicate more than what he was before. Mm. And all the other guys are able to talk and they're able to tell their story, whereas Albert is not. And maybe that's why we don't find out his story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's played by Stephen First.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really good character that he plays in this movie. He also plays Flounder in Animal House.
Yeah.
And he was in Babylon 5 for like all the seasons playing Vera Cotto.
Oh, he had like loads of prosthetics on him. Like.
Yeah, but the mad hair he had. And I think he was the barman. But yeah, he was in Babylon 5. And guess what? As of recording this, he's only dead 2 weeks.
Go away.
He died 2 weeks ago.
Oh, no way.
I know.
That was about when we kind of were thinking about watching it.
So I was watching the movie and Stephen First was fucking roaring for a priest.
Jesus.
Isn't that mad?
I went up for Stephen then.
Yeah. Pouring some out on the sidewalk for Stephen First, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Albert Iannucci.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
So, yeah, I mean, like, great story mechanism. You know, he comes back, he can't tell. But, you know, Billy is, like, Michael Keaton's in the van. He's like, what the fuck? Huh? Mm. And then the next thing, it cuts the night scene. And then they're all like, fuck this. And they all go their separate ways.
Yeah.
They all have their own little adventure. Mm-hmm. It all goes out. The thing, then they all come back, and then they have to, you know, in the end, defend the life of the doctor who's lying in state in a coma in the hospital from these two cops that want to kill him because he's the only witness to this crime. And it turns out that the person that they killed is a cop, and it's all that he was going to expose them for their corruption and all this kind of stuff. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, really, really good. Classic 80s film. Some really nice moments in it. Nice little really set pieces.
Stuff, yeah.
Brilliant touches. But a must watch, right?
Oh, I'd say so, yeah. Like, start to finish, like, I don't think there's any like scenes that are unnecessary or don't sit well. Like,
there would be no director's cut for this.
No, I wouldn't imagine so. I never found one anyway.
Like, each of the characters are equally lovable. There's no standout character. And I know we said that Albert seems maybe like a little bit of a, I don't know, mascot or a superfluity, but I think that, like, a MacGuffin would be more like, he's still a good character.
Yeah, still works. Like, that's what I mean, is because you'd have movies, so many movies that would have exactly similar characters, device move along, but you don't feel anything for them because it's completely transparent that that's what they are.
Yeah,
there's no other reason for them to exist.
And I think it's from those movies that people who are making movies now would look back on and go, okay, we have to have this guy, this guy, and this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't put the love into it.
Yeah.
And then you feel like, eh, fuck
you just
that
end up
guy.
With the archetypes.
Yeah, fuck that. There's no mate.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to talk about favourite parts in the film.
Favourite parts.
Some of my favourite parts involve like the character developments in the second act.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jack going into the church thinking he's Jesus.
That's
and he's
brilliant.
Praying, and it's like an evangelical like black church, and they're all like praising Jesus,
and he's sermonizing and about his history in the advertising.
And they all get up,
I used to have money and women.
Amen.
Oh god, the women.
Woo. Yeah. And then he's like, and I thought I'd clean myself, and he starts taking off all his clothes and everything. And I think at the start the person that was keeping him together was Henry.
Mm, yeah.
being a neurotic doctor, he's like, we have to get Dr. Weitzman, we have to call Dr. Newald, we have to get back in the van and get back to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And he goes around, and after they all run off, he tries to keep them together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Henry is way more important than a lot of people would presume, or he could be seen as just like a beta character.
Yeah, but yeah. he is responsible for trying to get them back yeah. on track to what they were supposed to be doing.
So have you got any other favourite bits?
There's one bit, it's another Peter Boyle bit, which links into one of my favourite Christopher Lloyd bits, just like you were saying about character yeah. development. But Peter Boyle, they're walking through the hospital later yeah. on in the movie when they're all dressed up as doctors or surgeons trying to get to the room.
While they're trying to defend the life of their doctor, Dr. Weitzman, in a coma.
Exactly, yeah. And Peter Boyle is walking by and there's an old man in a trolley in the hall as they're walking, and like the camera doesn't stop, the scene keeps moving along, but it's just a little throwaway thing, and he just puts his hand on the patient and goes, "Arise, my son, and walk." And the guy gets up, and you just see it in the background, the guy gets up and collapses in a heap on the ground.
And this is when Billy Michael Keaton is trying to bullshit the doctors of the hospital yeah. to say, "And we're this doctor and we're that mm-hmm. doctor." Yeah,
and
really.
And then that leads to Sikorsky, Lloyd's character, just rattling off all the stuff that he used to that annoy people in the psychiatric yeah. institution. It's like, oh, he's going to need 100 mils of, you know, papazine and blah blah blah. Yeah. But like, it actually works in this scene.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, there's some really nice bits as well for Billy, mm-hmm. Which is Michael Keaton's character. While they're all sitting in the van, mm-hmm. Dr. Weitzman gets out of the van to bring Albert for a piss, and he goes, "No ghost stories, Bill." And he tells a story about the wolves of New York, and is like,
mm-hmm.
Do you ever watch that movie, Wolven? That was filmed down here. You know, the big wolves, the fangs, the shit hanging out of their mouths, and all this stuff, you know. And Henry and Jack are in the van, like, going, "What the fuck?" And then he sits back and he goes, "Yeah, it was a good movie." Oh, just real gentle, and Mike Christopher Lloyd's face mm. just like
freaking out.
Yeah, it's so fucking good, man. Like really, mm. really nice bits.
Mm.
Lovely little jokes and set pieces like that in this mm. film that'll keep you like totally interested. There's no dead air, or there's no downbeat mm. to the next scene ever.
No,
do you know? One of Billy Caulfield's major motivations in the film is his girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
played by. A short-haired
Lorraine Bracco.
Yeah, Lorraine Bracco from Goodfellas, we know her from. She's in The Sopranos as well. Mm-hmm. She's the typical New York, like if it was...
Strong, loud, brash.
Yeah,
but
we're going to do the alternative
lovable,
cast like, later on, mm-hmm. but she's definitely like, you know, an Italian, like mm-hmm. passionate. Yeah, Billy! Mm-hmm. You know, where have you been, Billy? You've been gone a year and a half. What am I supposed to do? Sit around and wait for you to call me? And you're like, all right. Henry, who the fuck do you think you are, Henry?
Yeah,
like
it seems similar stuff there.
Seems like just that archetypal naggy Italian woman. Mm-hmm. But she's very passionate, and Billy obviously is in love with her. And at this point, we find out that he's been in there for a year and a half.
Yeah.
You haven't called me in a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, fuck, man, he seems kind of altogether still. Like he had just gone in there.
Yeah.
He's there a year and a half. And the Taurazine is having no effect on him. He's just totally like, yeah, it takes me tablets every day, but I'm still sassy. I'm still crazy.
Bursting at the seams.
That's it, man. Mm-hmm. So the relationship between them is really nice, isn't it?
That's lovely. I thought as well, I read there's an interesting comparison to Caulfield's character was kind of an homage or a little mirror of Nicholson's character in Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes.
So I kind McMurphy. Of play it that way, exactly. Yeah, so yeah, to play it that
it
way.
It does
yeah.
have that crazy eyebrows and
mm-hmm.
the whole erratic, spontaneous, like...
It's like, come on, well, let's just do it. Let's just
fucking
go.
Set the place on fire. Yeah, like, it's just, yeah. And the way that he goes to her to go like, hey, I still love you. Like, don't forget about me.
Mm-hmm.
And she reveals that she's like shacked up with another dude and she's mm-hmm. living in a, you know, a
fancy New York
apartment mm-hmm. with this rich fucking, you know, yuppie guy. This is the height of yuppieism now. It's 1989, so we're
the money is starting to really climb.
Yeah, it's like. Trump time,
mm-hmm.
and you know, Billy can't really compete with that. Mm-hmm. But yet, she still loves him at the core of herself.
Yeah,
loves his character, loves his like crazy spontaneity, and it's mm-hmm. just it's all like, well, I'm passionate, mm-hmm. and your man just seems like a limp dick suit guy who goes to work and all that stuff. You know, so another one of my favorite bits is when Billy goes to Riley, who's just mm-hmm. the Lorraine Bracco's character, and it goes to Riley and says like, okay, listen, we're in trouble now, like you gotta help us. And they're in the apartment and the guy is getting ready for work, and it comes up on the news. So after the hospital reports See, the cops are trying to cover up their corruption.
Mm-hmm.
So they spin the story to say, like, four escaped mental patients are basically, they're attacking their doctor and they've escaped and they're, you know, crazy on the loose. Mm-hmm. And the story, like, filters down and comes out in the news and it shows the four pictures. So the guys are standing in the apartment going, come here, listen, you have to help us. We have to save our doctor. There's these two cops. We can't go to the cops because they know, mm-hmm. you know, we have to do it ourselves. We have to, you know, Riley, help us. You know, we need money. We need something. And her boyfriend, the limp dick, is like, getting ready for work, putting on his tie, and meets Billy, and Noah's like, this is the guy who used to fucking shit up my girlfriend, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, hey, how you doing? Sees their mugshots on the news and goes like, okay, starts ringing the cops, you know?
Yeah.
And they have to leave. But in that interaction, while they're in the apartment, Albert is eating loads of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Henry's like looking around. He's like wiping the
dust off.
Looking at his finger to see if there's dust. Like, they're all still very...
Oh, they're very in character, yeah.
And there's nobody standing around slack-jawed waiting for somebody to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're all doing their own thing. And one of my favourite bits, and I think Jack McDermott, for me, is the best supporting actor in this film. Like, yeah. Really fucking tight.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Peter Boyle shit, right? So, he's standing at the back of the room, and he's not moving for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And you're wondering, like, what's he doing? And he's looking at this white sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
And a flash of his old life comes forward when he goes... This is nice art.
Hmm.
I like this art.
Hmm.
And then he just starts going as, neo-impressionist or something like that. And blah, blah, blah. And he describes the whole thing. And your man's like, hey, you're good. He's like, I know art. And you're just like, that's fucking a real insight. Like another layer of the onion peeled away from Peter Boyle's character. Like, you're like, this guy knows his fucking shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And another one of the real nice... Peter Boyle moments is when he then goes back into his old job.
Yes.
And he's talking to... He meets a guy on the street.
Yeah.
I can't remember the fucking guy's name. It's like incidental, like, I used to work with your character. And he's a real schmaltzy, you know, chiclets for teeth, kind of nice, big collared, fancy suit guy. He's like, hey, Jack, how you doing, baby? Like one of these, you know, I'm an advertising slick millionaire. Talking, slick like, culture. And Jack is like, I'm doing okay. I'm in a mental hospital now. And he's like, oh, tough break. Yeah, work is hard. It doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, it doesn't miss a beat.
Just like, oh, that's got to be tough. So, okay, I'm off. I got to go for a meeting. And you're like, okay. He's like, we must go for coffee sometime, Jack. Mm-hmm. Jack is like, okay. And then at the crux point, at the decision when the group goes like, okay, we need help.
Mm-hmm.
We got to make moves. Peter Boyle goes to his old job.
Yeah.
Goes into the building and says, hey, what's the crack? I need some money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been going around like I'm fucking in a mental hospital. Shit's going on. And it's really, really real.
Mm.
And he loses the whole Jesus thing. And he says, I think I'm Jesus. He doesn't say I am Jesus. He said, I think I'm, you know, I'm fucking psychotic.
Yeah.
This business fucked my head. I need your help, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really sincere kind of a moment. Like
really,
this.
Like the whole character opens up,
mm-hmm.
and it's just fucking deadly. And then this little guy Murray comes in. He's like little glasses, Murray. You know, the thing, and he has like a mustache and whatever. And he comes into the office and he's like, "Hello." Oh, he's like, "Hey, I'm Murray." And then we find out then at that point the reason he was committed is because he tried to throw Murray out of a fifth floor window or whatever. Right. And that was the breaking point for Jack's character,
mm-hmm.
because Murray was a little fucker and he undercut him or whatever. So you're like, oh, fuck Murray, you know? And he starts being really real. Murray goes out, obviously realizes, oh, fuck, this guy is here. He tried to show me. I'm going to ring the cops. Like, they're looking for him. Rings the cops. Jack gets pinched. The cops come in. The guy is like, I'm sorry, Jack. And he's like, I forgive you. So he slips straight back into the Jesus character. He's like, I tried to be real with you. If you had helped me, it could have cured me. But you know what? I forgive you. I'm Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way out, as he's pulled out of the office, they overhear this conversation in the office about this big account. So Murray comes into the office to ask. He's like, hey, you know, have you made a decision on Mitachi?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys, these Japanese guys, they're waiting for a decision on the advertising. Like, did we get their contract or not? Are we going to go ahead and do it? And as Jack is being pulled into the elevator by the police, he goes like, hey, Murray. Yeah, Jack? When I was in the office, I overheard. You got the Mitachi account. It's $30 million. And Murray is like, we got it. We got the Mitachi account. We got the Mitachi account. He's dancing around high-fiving people and all like that. And he just goes, hey, Murray. Just kidding. as the door closes, and you're like, that's just, that's mwah. And it shows development in his personality because he didn't throw him out of a window this time. He just like knew where to get him.
Got him another way.
Got him the other way. Mm-hmm. Really, really, really great moment. Very funny, like just very Peter Boyle-y as well, you know.
Yeah. He's one of these guys that doesn't seem to age either. Like he was born that age.
He was born bald and
30 years later he looks the same.
The guy who plays Henry Sikorsky, Christopher Lloyd, like we've seen him already. We've seen him in like with the first Back to the Future movie.
Mm.
This year, the 1989 when it was released, Back to the Future 2 was released as well, but it was all filmed in the same year. And then for Billy Caulfield, Michael Keaton, he was also after, like, he filmed first the first Batman,
yeah,
and then filmed this. And Batman was released at the same time as in the same year.
Yeah.
So two of the main characters in this movie also had two blockbuster
major movies coming out. Like.
Yeah, much more well-regarded movies. And that's why I think this one was buried, because it did poorly at the box office. It wasn't really like a critical acclaim kind of a thing. And both of those lads already had two other
movies to be promoting and working on. Yeah, yeah.
Seems like a bit...
Just got lost in the shuffle, kind
of. It did, yeah. And there's a lot of movies like that, man. Mm-hmm. Especially now when it's like peak movies, peak TV, people lashing stuff out, you know?
Yeah.
Have you any other favourite moments?
Nothing really. I think there's a funny like little throwaway moment at the end when they come in and Dr. Weitzman wakes up in the hospital, and then Billy and all the guys are there and they're trying to all play it cool, like, don't fucking mention that we're the mental patients, you know. Yeah, just like we're all the doctors. And then Lorraine Bracco comes in and it's just like everyone is wide eyed and like, oh Billy, hi, yeah,
well done, Billy,
good man.
Yeah, it's class how Billy kind of takes the action man role.
Mm.
And he's going back into the hospital voluntarily to go, okay, I need to sort some shit out.
Mm-hmm.
I do. But I'm okay. I'm better than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's evident to... See, you get to see the reflection of his character's development in the eyes of Riley, who is, I think, quite has violent tendencies herself, do you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, like, I think that's... there's a little commentary on that. It's like, well, everybody has a little...
Yeah.
A little crazy in them. I mean, like, the two... Like you were saying before, the two conservative doctors that were giving shit to Weitzman about taking him out on the trip, they end up
getting swapped.
Getting swapped out as patients, getting drugged up.
That was the whole A team swap and change, where Albert pretends to have to go for a piss. Mm-hmm. And another brilliant moment, like Albert pretends to go for a piss while they're being taken out by the cops.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going from the police station into like an armored van where they're going to get transported back to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And they have the doctors. There's two doctors. There's the driver and there's a policeman.
Yes.
And it matches the four patients. And the guy's pulled a gun out of the old-ass security guard's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And Albert is all like, batter up, like holding up the gun. And Peter Boyle takes the gun off him. And he's like, I'll hold this for you. Now, you guys, nobody move. And then Christopher Lloyd comes over and goes, can I hold the gun? And Peter Boyle is like, no, I'm holding the gun. And he's like, come on, I'll let you sit in the front seat. And he's like, okay. And he gives it to him. And then Christopher Lloyd like goes up and he points it. He's like, and he has a little smirk, like a little contented smile. It's so fucking good. Like, it's just real nice. Like, can I have a bit of control, please? Yeah. It's really, really good. And speaking of Henry Sikorsky's character, a super heartfelt moment where he goes back to his family home, gets to see what we find out then is his 6 or 7 year old daughter. He has a wife. The wife is like, we're waiting for you, honey, we love you. Mm-hmm. And there's pictures all around him of him in the family pose, like smiling. And you wonder, like, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened there?
There's no real explanation of the break there.
Yeah.
But I think they try and kind of allude to it in that
He might have gone postal.
Overworked, like as I said, or whatever it was, waste management or postal office. It was just something where the monotony of it
the
just
OCD
broke
got
him.
Too much. Yeah. We find out what happened to Billy. He pulled up a load of seats at a hockey game and assaulted a bunch of security guards and had to get taken away. So it was like a violent outburst. And instead of going to jail, he got committed.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's there for a year and a half, I guess, even though he's compos mentis.
Yeah.
He just had anger sentence. Issues or whatever. Yeah. So it's, there is a lot of like lovely development in it, and you know, no spoilers. Nobody dies or whatever.
No.
But the action scene at the end is real good, and they're chasing him down, and it's a real cool moment between Riley and Billy where they're all at gunpoint, and the cop, who's played by James Remar, who plays the Gianelli in the movie, and you know him, he's the bad guy in everything.
Yeah, he just has a bad face.
Like. Yeah, a bad guy face. He's in Miracle on 34th Street. He's like the enforcer, you know, that one with Richard Attenborough. And the little girl from Matilda who her face never grew up. Do you know that girl? Yeah. Mara Smallface. He was also in another movie called Dream Team in 1999, which from the cover looks like porn.
All right.
Yeah, pretty weird. He was a bad guy in Pineapple Express, the bad cop. And he's also a bad racist KKK dude in Django Unchained. True. So he's like, yeah, James Remar is like, if you need a bad guy...
He's your man to call.
He's the man. And O'Malley is played by Philip Bosco, who has been in a fucking million... look at his IMDb. It's a million films playing this, like, I'm a gruff, you know, Irish-American cop.
Mm-hmm.
They're all just, like, bitty movies. The most famous is probably the Samuel L. Jackson Shaft from 2000.
Yes.
And that's the most main role. Like, he's the antithesis of Shaft, in that movie. The chase and all that stuff. So Gianelli gets the gun and he's holding it up to Riley's head, and Billy is holding the gun on him, and it's all like, I'll shoot her, and Billy's like, go ahead.
Okay.
I don't care.
I'm nuts.
I'm crazy. And he's like, I'm going to count to three, and Billy goes, I'm not even going to count.
Yeah.
That's so fucking cool. It's
brilliant.
Fucking cool, that moment. And then he lets it go, and then she comes over and goes, Billy, what the fuck? You don't care? Mm-hmm. You don't care about me? It's like, what? You thought I was going to shoot you, right? Yeah. James Remar looks back over his shoulder. He's like, yeah. He's like, see, I lied, but like, fucking, come on. Stop giving me shit. Like, it's just so natural. I could picture like my girlfriend doing that shit. If I was like, shoot her, I don't care. Yeah. And she bait the shit
out of me for 3 weeks. Yeah,
absolutely. Like, but some really nice, like, real moments in that film. So we do a thing on White Press Play called the alternative cast. Right. So who would you have as an alternative cast? Like, we've gone through loads of lovely moments, loads of nice little things. Like, you'll watch all that, you'll forget everything you've heard on this show when you go to watch it, and then as they come along, you're like, oh, here's this bit. Oh, it's way better than the lad said. Like, definitely watch this film. It's fucking delicious. So the alternative cast then, for me, I think Riley Lorraine Bracco could be played by Marissa Tomei. And it's that Italian character from My Cousin Vinny. Like, my biological clock is ticking. Same kind of aggressive tone or whatever. And she got an Oscar in My Cousin Vinny for that shit.
Yeah.
Like, she's good as the Italian girlfriend. Really, really class. Who would you have?
I don't know. I wouldn't have changed around. Yeah. Like, that's what I said. Like, the main three, Keaton, Boyle, and Lloyd.
Yeah,
they are great for those roles. Like, I wouldn't be able to picture anyone else. The only one I'd change out just for the shits and the giggles, put John Candy in instead of Stephen First for Albert's character.
Maybe, yeah. I think he has more of a presence than Stephen First.
So. Yeah, I mean, like, I think he would have, I don't know, sold it a bit more, like
brought it on a bit, maybe.
Yeah,
yeah. I think the fact that he worked
with limited lines, like,
yeah, he was restricted by lines, was maybe a. You know.
So if you had someone who was more of a powerful, like you said, like a bigger acting presence,
Yeah, it might have overshadowed that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the Jesus character played by Peter Boyle, the Jack McDermott, Zach Galifianakis. Wouldn't that be good?
I could see it, yeah.
Like a Zach Galifianakis character.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to replace Michael Keaton in this film.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Michael Keaton fan. Multiplicity, like Batman, like like Beetlejuice. Come on, like every time
he does comedy and he does dark.
Yeah, really every time he hits it, he fucking hits it hard, and it's supernatural, and it's him. It's always him.
Mm-hmm.
And when I watch Birdman, and there's so many like in jokes to his career, it's the fucking story of that man's career. You know, being the Birdman, being Batman. It's like. And there's nobody else could have played that, and like an Oscar winner or stuff like that. You should watch Birdman as well. But he's started to come back in these kind of bit roles.
Yeah.
With he was the first time I'd seen him in like 10 years or something like that was the lieutenant in The Other Guys with Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell, and I was like, and he made loads of TLC lyric jokes. Right. So like, hey, what can I say? Don't go chasing waterfalls. You're like, isn't that a, is that a song lyric? No. I just made that up. He was also in the new RoboCop. He was the Perry White of the J. Jonah Jameson of the newspaper in Spotlight, the Boston newspaper. Like Beetlejuice. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, couldn't, there's supposed to be a Beetlejuice sequel coming out.
Really?
And yeah, there's the brakes are on it right now. But Keaton is like, oh, I'll do it. I'll do it. Like 30 years on, like absolutely do it. And then make them up and they look identical, you know. Yeah. Save that for later. Like, so fucking good, man. But Birdman, like, if you're
Birdman's a,
if you watch Dream Team and you want a fucking Michael Keaton fest,
mm-hmm.
then go watch Birdman.
Yeah.
So hard to replace him in this film. Who'd you have?
I don't know, like who could straddle the line of being that
crazy.
angry and wild on it while still being funny and sweet.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy or someone would be too slapstick.
Yeah. Too frenetic.
Yeah.
Would you have maybe what was your man's name? He's in he gets shot in the hand in Prince of Thieves. Talks like this.
Oh, Christian Slater.
Could you have Christian
Slater?
Yeah,
that could work, because you remember him from what's that one he did with Winona Ryder where he's a nut job? I can't remember the name of the movie now, but like, yeah, he just plays a fucking wacko in that as well, but it's the same kind of hyper happy but dangerous.
Manic.
Yeah.
Heathers.
That's it.
I mean, I think he could do that kind of, you know, wolven and the fucking shit hanging out of his mouth. He has that like manic energy.
Yeah,
but then he's also able to go into heartfelt. He's able to go into like soft, into, you know, like, hey, I fucking love you. But also, you know, if anyone fucks at me while I'm in the middle of shifting, yeah, I just immediately break out into a fight. Like, no, from zero to fuck you in 2 seconds. Like, obviously, you know, you could have a young Al Pacino.
Yes.
Like, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think Keaton was kind of maybe channeling that. That rage.
Explosive kind of stuff, yeah.
I didn't know how crazy he was until when they were running out of the apartment, Albert loses his hat. Mm-hmm. They're running to Riley's apartment because your man had called the cops.
Mm-hmm.
And Albert loses his hat. He's like, oh, my hat. He goes, but he doesn't say that, obviously, because he can't talk. But he goes back to get it. And then the cops are arresting him. And then Michael Keaton's like, okay, I gotta help him. And he does this dive like a fucking football tackle on the guards. And you're like, why would you sacrifice yourself like that? But it just seems like very Pacino-y, very Nicholson-y, manic.
Yeah.
But also heartfelt. And I like that. It's fucking fair. Like, imagine talking about Michael Keaton and saying the only people you're going to be able to replace him with are the best actors in the world ever. Do you know?
It's a hard, like, you have to pull out the stops.
Absolutely. And we're going to do, like, we talked at the start of the show, the different show types that we're going to do, you know. We're also going to go through different actors' bodies of work and different directors' bodies of work. So, like, if you were doing a Michael Keaton show, we'd do it live on Discord through Patreon and on Crowdcast and stuff like that. We'd be filming it. So I have a Mevo camera now and we're going to have kind of a round table panel. We'll film that. We'll broadcast it live. You guys can ask questions or call in and do your suggestions or say your favorite moments from Michael Keaton films. And we do a whole 2 hours of just Michael Keaton. I send him an email. He might call in.
You never know.
He's not doing much. You know, he's not that much sitting around.
Yeah.
And if he knows that there's a couple of thousand people talking about him, and they're just going, yeah, it's deadly. Like, hey, let's have a go, you know.
He seems to be into the idea of, you know, revivals and being talked about. I mean, so.
He fucking deserves it, man.
Yeah.
He really deserves it. Who else would you have? I mean, like, Lord of Mercy on the fucking Souls of the Faithfully Departed. Like, Stephen First, he's only gone 2 weeks now, but He could be replaced by anybody of that comedy ilk.
Yeah.
Do you know? Who could you replace Christopher Lloyd with?
Who's good at neuroses?
I think maybe, I'm the gatekeeper. Are you the keymaster?
Oh, what's his name? I can see his little face and his eyes and his glasses.
Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
I'm the keymaster. Are you the gatekeeper? Like, that's as good as I get, Rick Moranis. Yeah. But like it could be Rick. I think he's too small though. He needs more of a presence, like a taller kind of. Is there anybody modern that you could do? I guess Zach Woods, who plays Jared from Silicon Valley, has that kind of. Did you ever watch Silicon Valley?
I think he's kind of the longer guy with the sharp nose,
the tall, pasty, ghostly
yeah,
looking.
I know the actor. Yeah.
And as Silicon Valley goes on and on, you find out that he's had like a super dark past, or he was homeless and like possibly a homosexual prostitute, and against his will, and possibly, you know, like he was foster homed, and he has psychological issues, and he's overcome all that, and he's super zen, and you know, this guy fucks.
Mm-hmm.
He can play that nice, front-facing character where it's like, I care for you and I do all that stuff, but some fucked up shit happened, and he has like that whole dark side. Like Christopher Lloyd plays some dark, like part. Like he was
sure, even in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Man, I was just gonna say that. Who Framed Roger Rabbit? The Addams Family.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? He was also in One for Robert Cuckoo's Nest. He played like that, the kind of the weird Faber. I think his name was like a weird, like psycho patient.
Mm-hmm.
Very. You know, dark behind.
Yeah.
And I guess like a troubled dude in real life too, a little bit, like, you know. And obviously Doc Brown, which is, you know, the Libyans party. But it's the thing of like, you have to have that vibe of straddling crazy and nice. And the same with Jack, with Peter Boyle's character, like crazy and nice. And Zach Galifianakis can turn it from like, I love in the stand up, but he does that thing where he goes from zero to fucking screaming.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, sorry, can you get me these fries are cold? Like, he goes this, he said, I love doing that. Just turn it right up. He has a video of the gig at the Purple Onion. Is one of his, like, best stand-up show. And he does that in that. It's very funny. Or he does the thing about, like, the pretentious illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, give me your glasses, give me your glasses. He puts the glasses on. He goes, I thought I told you. I can't read. It's just real. go watch that Purple Onion. But yeah, I think it's hard to replace these dudes, you know. Yeah. The doctor, Dr. Weitzman, it could be anybody.
Swap in any of those 80s faces.
Someone with a fucking, you know, glasses and a beard and
yeah,
bit of a Jewish tinge to them maybe, or something.
A little Greek Orthodox.
Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. Something with a curl in it. But just like, you know, those three main characters, Peter Boyle, Chris Floyd, Michael Keaton, gel so well together. And I think because it was released at the time of Batman and Back to the Future, that was super overshadowed.
Yeah.
Big time. I think so. And it definitely was one of the 90s. Well, it's 89, but it was one of the 90s, like, you know, proper good TV movie. Like, you watch it on TV, you're like, hey, those guys are all famous. What's this thing?
Yeah.
And the music draws you in. It has Was Not Was, Everybody Walked a Dinosaur, you know, the orchestral soundtrack. Really, really nice. I do like the tagline that they gave the movie while it was being released.
Yeah.
And it was like, what the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. Like, what is this film? The tagline that they had originally was, this morning they were... Okay, I'll do it in the movie voice, sorry.
Mm.
This morning they were playing ping pong in the hospital rec room. Now they're lost in New York and framed for murder. This was never covered in group therapy. The Dream Team. Four guys on a field trip to reality. Like, it's weird. Like, it's a weird... It's a weird thing, you know? And it's one of the last films to actually be filmed in New York. You know, all through the mid to late 90s, they would be filming in like Vancouver or Toronto or in Boston if they wanted a New York skyline or New York streets. And they were actually filming in Times Square, you know, where they go into, they went, they were, Peter Boyle had taken off all his clothes in the church, as we talked about before, and they went and they had to clothe him, so they went into like an army surplus store, and that's a fucking store in New York, you know, right off Times Square. And they said, like, we got $7, we got to dress this guy for $7. A really good moment where he says, like, yeah, we're a crack group of secret commandos or whatever, and we're hunting a group of Libyans and we need to dress the colonel. And it's kind of like the A-Team nod, you know. But yeah, it's just, you know, I think it's one of Keaton's best performances. And he's great at playing a psycho. He plays a psycho in Getting Sober and in Pacific Heights. And it's definitely a must watch.
I want to find out about Michael Keaton, actually, that I didn't know.
Yeah.
His real name.
Oh, no.
Michael Douglas.
And he had to change it because of the other Michael Douglas.
He changed it to avoid confusion with the other maker.
Brilliant.
Yeah. That's how I only found that out there recently.
That would be really confusing. Starring Michael Douglas. Which one?
Michael Douglas and Michael Douglas in
this summer. Yeah, that's deadly, man. And the director as well. Like, tip of the cap to Howard Zeef, the director. Before he made this movie, he had taken a break for 5 years. And before that, he was making the movie Unfaithfully Yours, which is, I think, a Dudley Moore kind of love triangle-y movie. I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. And before Unfaithful Yours, he took a break for 4 years. He made a bunch of movies in the 70s, took a break for 4 years, made Unfaithful Yours, took a break for five, made this in 1989, and then in 1991 made My Girl, and then My Girl 2 a couple of years later, and then that's it.
Yeah.
So he's just like dropping...
Pop up every couple of years and just make a little
thing. Like, My Girl is like an ultimate classic, everyone's seen it kind of film. This is
the one just before it. Yeah.
Like that schmaltz, but not too much schmaltz.
Mm.
Do you know? My Girl is a fucking classic, man.
Yeah.
And this is definitely, if you like My Girl and the vibe, you'll love this.
Enjoy Dream Team as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you think we've covered it all now? We said all... Without ruining it.
Yeah. Like, we just hit off the highlights, basically. Yeah. Like.
And you can keep an eye out for those. Like, we could tell you them. Like, yeah. like an old person trying to tell you, you know, what happened on Lost. Do you know?
And then the man and the plane with the thing, and there was a spider.
You're like, okay, yeah, sound. It makes sense, but when you watch it, it's just mwah.
And there's loads of like things that we wouldn't get across. Like there's like one lines and looks and it's just
Keaton's face, such a fucking expressive, and his weird kind of like rapey
angry smile,
like angry rapey kind of like, oh, you know, you're like, oh, you're fucking make me feel weird, Mike. So go and watch this one. I don't know where you get it. It's not on Netflix, but you could maybe download it somewhere on the internet. Something like that. So all that's left for me to do is thank you for listening. This is another episode of White Press Play. We are on all the social medias: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. We have a Reddit r/WhitePressPlay. You can get on there and leave your suggestions and comments about the show. This show is going to be up there, and you can leave comments there, or you can leave it on our website, WhitePressPlay.com. We also have a Patreon if you like the show, you want to support us, and you want to, you know, give us a dig out. Starts from $2, you get access to a whole bunch of stuff like behind the scenes stuff, videos, you get access to the Discord server, which is an app that is you know, text and audio based, and get in with all the other fans and talk about the films, TV and computer games you love. We'll also be playing game streaming from Steam and PlayStation 4. Get on that shit, it is good crack. Right now, as of time of recording, I'm playing The Last of Us. Scary shit. Good to watch, and we all get in and we have the chats like years of old, sitting around and make a hot Mega Drive passing it around every time we died. So we also have all these videos up on YouTube and VidMe as well for some of the copyrighted stuff that might get taken down on YouTube. I'm not putting up any full movies, but there definitely will be clips and little extra bits as the show evolves. And if you do like it, go leave us a review on iTunes, because I mean, it's not essential to me, but iTunes like it, and they, you know, they give us like high fives and back slaps, and you know, it makes the whole job a lot easier. And subscribe to the show on your podcast player if you're, you know, share it around, let people know we're here recommending movies, wasting our time, so you don't have to watching shite and saying what's good or not.
Digging through the dumpster and
exactly
picking out the gems.
Digging through the dumpster, bump. So thanks very much to Neil as well for joining me for this one. Neil, it was a trip down memory lane and you know, coke nose shooting laughs of old.
Yeah. No, thanks for having me on. It was good to run down the old memories.
Reminisce. There will be way more in the Rochford Archives, absolutely. Thanks for listening to White Press Play. That's it. Goodbye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.